What we need to know about Islam is that it's the world's fastest growing religion and the only significant religious system in the history of the human race with a socio-political structure of laws that mandate violence against the infidel.
Hank Canagraph of the Bible Answer Man talking about his presentation at the 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
The current narrative is that if you tell the truth in this regard, well, you'll radicalize Muslims. But that's pure propaganda. What we need to do is wake up to the truth concerning Islam.
You can meet and hear Hank Canagraph making the case against Islam at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference Friday, June 8th and Saturday, June 9th in Collinsville, Illinois. Collinsville is 15 miles east of St. Louis. Learn more and register at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385.
Conservatism is not primarily about creating the shortest possible list of rules for how our society is governed, but is about preserving the permanent things, the things that should be conserved.
When you look at the cause of pro-life, it's organically related to what we say about who Christ is and why he came.
So you cannot in any way make some coherence out of Jesus and Muhammad. The distance between the two is the distance of infinity.
Homeschooling moms with piano beginners practicing in the house love Issues Etc.
I was a little surprised to see a story in the headlines of National Public Radio reading Mormon funeral potatoes. That's going to catch your attention no matter what you're thinking about. The carb heavy meal for the end of the world. That's got to be one of the most clever, catchy headlines I have seen from National Public Radio in a long time. Ostensibly about, well, a limbering up in the social media of the Mormon church with a recipe for their famous Mormon funeral potatoes. Looking at the recipe, sounds to me like what we call here in the Midwest wedding potatoes. My wife makes them all the time. I think they're delicious. But the story is also about the Mormon view of the end times, not only packing on the carbs for a funeral, but for the return of Jesus. What do Mormons believe about the end times, and why are they so into the prepper culture? Greetings, welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in live on this Thursday afternoon, the 31st of May. Bill McKeever will join us here in the first few minutes. We're going to talk about that story from National Public Radio about Mormon funeral potatoes. Joy Pullman will join us after that, managing editor of The Federalist. We'll talk about college students and their self-described psychological disorders. It's been going up and up and up, especially in the last decade. Carol Tobias, president of National Right to Life, will be our guest to talk about a column in the New York Times titled "The Supreme Court's Next Abortion Chapter." We'll see what she thinks. Joel Bierman will be our guest. We're going to talk about the twofold goal of fatherhood. He says if you raise your kids and they turn out happy and law-abiding as a Christian father, you still haven't done your job. Then it's listener email and the Issues Etc. comment line. That comment line, 618-223-8382. Our regular old call-in number, 1-877-623-MYIE. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, or a tweet at IssuesETC. Joining us to talk about a National Public Radio story on Mormon funeral potatoes and Mormon preparations for the end times, Bill McKeever, founder of Mormonism Research Ministry based in Draper, Utah, and author of several books, including In Their Own Words, a collection of Mormon quotations, and Mormonism 101. Bill, welcome back.
Good to be with you, Todd. How are you?
I'm doing well. I've had what I think is a Midwest version of Mormon funeral potatoes, but I'm not sure it's the same thing. You live out there, you have to have had Mormon funeral potatoes. What do they taste like?
They're actually quite good. We have a lot of former Mormons that attend our church, so whenever we have any type of gathering where the congregation is all invited, you can expect that there's going to be probably at least two or three different versions of this. My favorite, I guess you could say, is more the hash brown type of potatoes rather than the big chunky kind, so I don't know if that's more fattening or more calories. I have no idea, but they are quite good. But one thing we do know about this is the kind that we have here with the cornflakes on top, I don't know how far back this tradition goes, but as far as I know, cornflakes only go back to 1894, so it probably came about after that, I would assume.
So they're called funeral potatoes because they're served at funeral dinners or something like that?
Apparently so. I kind of moved into that kind of a tradition coming up here in 2004, but that was the story that I was told. But yet you find them, I guess, at just about any public gathering that a Mormon would be invited to go to. It's a big Mormon thing out here. I never really knew about them until I moved up here, but they catch on, and that's actually quite tasty.
Before we get into the kind of the prepper end of this, the NPR story also notes, kind of theorizes that Mormons gravitate toward the fatty, sugary, carby kind of food because of previous dietary restrictions. What do you think about that?
You know, I don't know if there is a connection to that. I couldn't say one way or the other, but I do know here in Utah, as in many other places in the United States, in the abundance of high-carb foods, that there is tend to be a weight problem around here, just like there is everywhere else. So I wouldn't know if there's a real connection that the article brought out, though.
On a more serious note, one of the things that the NPR story does talk about is the, I think they refer to it as kind of a doomsday preparation that Mormons sometimes engage in. What can you tell us about this?
Well, there seems to be quite a bit of interest in, you know, being prepared and things like that, because the Mormon Church does have this type of policy where they hope that their members would have at least a 3-month supply of food and water in case there's any type of a calamity or a catastrophe or so forth. Some people take that to a bit of an extreme, and I remember not too terribly long ago, there was actually, if I'm not mistaken, there was an admonition that came down from church headquarters admonishing members not to go to an extreme. Of course, whenever you have, like, the church boasting that they have any kind of food supply and they're encouraging their people to have a food supply, one of my criticisms was, well, if you're going to brag about that and make it public, haven't you just put all your members in some kind of danger should there really be a catastrophe here in the United States? I mean, people of no moral values would see the Mormon homes as being a potential target. I caught flack for saying that. I'll probably catch flack for saying it now, as if I was giving, you know, unregenerated mankind ideas they never thought of before. I don't think I'm doing that. But it is a policy, I guess you could call it, in the Mormon Church to have a food supply. In fact, I remember when we were looking at homes up here when we made our move, and we would go down into the basements, just about every house we looked at had a room designated for food storage, which is usually something that's very typical up here.
So talk about the end times views of the Mormons. What do Mormons expect to happen at Christ's return?
You know, that's a great question, because I don't really hear them ever talking about it, except more in a generic sense. They do tend to believe that Jesus is coming back. And in the early years of Mormonism, there was talk about him coming back to Independence, Missouri, because that was the gathering place in early Mormonism. Now, that idea, I don't think, is being espoused so much anymore. It's probably still on the book somewhere that that's what they think Jesus is going to do, is going to come back to Missouri. But I don't hear them ever talking about that. Their excitement about the end times, I would say, is certainly not comparable to the excitement that we see in many evangelical circles. But it's not to say that they don't believe that Jesus is coming back at some time, because they certainly do.
How does it fit within their theology of kind of their deification theology that Jesus would come back? It doesn't seem to be entirely necessary in their theology, is what I'm saying, because the Mormons' ultimate hope is not so much to be in the near presence of Christ or the resurrection, but it seems like their hope is to become gods themselves.
Well, that's exactly true. Once the judgment takes place and everybody is assigned to their level of glory, as it's understood in Mormon theology, those who were good enough to reach the top level of the celestial kingdom would be rewarded with exaltation, or what they call godhood. So you're right. Jesus really doesn't play any real role in a Mormon's hereafter once the judgment has taken place. Now everything pertains to them. They are going to get their own world. They don't like it when people say planet. I don't know why. It seems like it's a synonymous term with me. But they don't use that word generally. They will say they get a world or an earth. And Mormon leaders have taught in the past that they will then populate that earth just as they believe their God, the one they call Elohim, God the Father, is populating this earth, and that we are all his spirit children at one time who came into mortality to prove ourselves worthy in order to become exalted in the next life.
You mentioned something about that kind of feature of Mormon history where at the beginning, at least, during the time of Joseph Smith and shortly thereafter, it was an apocalyptic kind of a movement, wasn't it?
Oh, I would agree with that. In fact, I think that's one of the reasons why Joseph Smith's message was embraced as well as it was. He wasn't the only one, of course. You had the Millerites back during the 1840s as well that were talking about the soon return of Christ. And that was a belief that was very much had by a lot of professing Christians, quote-unquote, back at that time. But it's really interesting that you mentioned that, because it's not something that I notice Mormons talking about any longer. I just don't hear it. I can't even recall when a Mormon leader spent his conference message on that particular topic. And again, it's not that they haven't, mentioned as an aside, well, Jesus is coming back and things like that. They certainly have, but they don't really talk about all the details like they used to, for instance, in the 19th century.
Does their theology at all opine as to what will happen to this planet with its God after Jesus' return? And would they call it the end of the world? That doesn't seem to make a lot of sense.
Yeah, that's a great question. I don't think I have a prepared answer for you on that one. I can't think of what they've said about that specifically, because this is basically, this planet here, this world, is Elohim's reward for being a good human wherever he was. We don't know where he was, and Mormons don't either, but he was on some earth similar to this one, but this happens to be his reward for being the good human that he was. So you would think, if that's the case, it's not going to come to a literal end, because this is his reward. I would think that it would have to go on, but you know what? I can't think of a quote offhand that specifically says one way or another on that.
That just seems to be a pretty big gap.
Yeah.
In at least kind of the logic of their theology, trying to meld Joseph Smith's unique ideas about God and man with something resembling Christian revelation, it seems like it would have made more sense for him to have just abandoned the notion of Christ's return altogether.
Yeah, good point. Good point.
Since we started with funeral potatoes, in this part of the country they're called wedding potatoes. I have a curious question for you. Not okay. On the subject, I'm hoping you can answer it. My son was recently invited just to attend a friend's wedding. The friend is a Mormon.
Uh-huh.
He's been on his mission and all those things. And I said, where are they going to have the wedding? And he said, well, it's going to be out at a little conference center near our house. And I was just wondering myself, is that going to be the wedding itself, or for it to be a proper Mormon wedding, does it have to take place in the temple, which in this case would be over in St. Louis? There is a Mormon temple over there. How does that
Correct.
Work?
Correct. If this individual is going to have a marriage that lasts for time and eternity, there will have to be an eventual ceremony at the temple. And as you said, in St. Louis, I know exactly where that one is. That's where it would have to be. Now, there are cases where Mormons will be married outside the temple, and then later on they will go to the temple to be sealed. So the ceremony and what it actually does for the individual is basically the same ending. I mean, they're going to be sealed for time and eternity, whether it's done at the beginning or some time later on after they are legally married. But definitely, if they hope to be married for time and eternity, it has to take place in a temple. So if the ceremony itself is going to be outside of the temple, that's not totally unusual. It does happen, but for most Mormons, I would say that that's not an ideal thing to do. Usually, Mormons would rather get married in the temple right off the bat rather than go back later on and be sealed in the temple.
Finally, the National Public Radio story on the Mormon funeral potatoes notes that Mormons were limbering up in the social media wings, ready to explain their most delectable food. What kind of image do you expect the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints to project in social media?
Well, I think they've pretty much proven by their website, Mormon.org, which I always thought that URL was interesting because it came out around the same time I was hearing a lot of Mormons complain about being called Mormons. They wanted to be called Latter-day Saints for some reason, even though they call themselves, among themselves, Mormons. But in Mormon.org, they have a lot of testimonies of individual members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And basically these testimonies, as far as I'm concerned and what I see in them, is just trying to make it sound like Mormons are just average people, which I never thought they weren't. But I guess they feel that it's necessary to project this image that Mormons are not the strange people that some may have a stereotype for, and that they're just normal people like the rest of us, and they have jobs like the rest of us, even though we might say that their theology is certainly quirky and not biblical in many respects. But I find that to be the main theme of Mormon.org, is just say, hey, look at us, we're normal, just like you. So I think that's probably what they're going to try to project.
Bill McKeever is founder of Mormonism Research Ministry based in Draper, Utah. He's author of several books, including In Their Own Words, a collection of Mormon quotations, and Mormonism 101. You'll find a link to Mormonism Research Ministry under the Listen On Demand page at issuesetc.org. Bill, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
On the other side of the break, the number of college students, in particular entering freshmen, who are self-describing themselves as having psychological disorders has been on the rise since 2010. We're going to find out what that means, why that might be. Joy Pullman, managing editor of The Federalist, will be our guest after the break.
We're currently faced with a crisis in Christianity, a life and death struggle between orthodoxy and heresy, between the kingdom of Christ and the kingdom of the cults.
The Bible Answer Man, Hank Hanegraaff, talking about his presentation at the 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
The prosperity gospel, it's nothing short of a wholesale transformation of Christianity. It's the glory of the cross supplanted by the glory of consumerism. It's a fast food Christianity. It's long on looks, but it is dreadfully short on substance.
You can meet and hear Hank Hanegraaff at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference Friday, June 8th and Saturday, June 9th in Collinsville, Illinois. You'll find a conference schedule and you can register at issuesetc.org. Don't miss the premier conference for Christian laity, the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 8th and 9th in Collinsville, Illinois.
Quality, quantity, qualified. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Remember when education was about the fundamental skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic? And about reading great literature and studying history to give our kids a model for what it is to be a good person? Memoria Press's classical Christian curriculum offers that very model for your homeschool. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR17. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, a classical Christian education that works.
Are you tired of working out at big box gyms? You'll find quality personal training and qualified instruction at Performance Fitness in Edwardsville. You can even work out for a full 30 days before making a commitment to join. Find out more at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness is the facility in the St. Louis Metro East where the focus is on member results, not membership numbers. Performance Fitness 618.com.